Welcome back to another episode of the Real Talk on Women's Health podcast with Essentia Health. Today, we're talking about a variety of things that could potentially cause pediatric trauma, like trampoline accidents, ATV, UTV accidents. And for this episode, I'm joined by Julie Otteson, a trauma surgeon and the pediatric trauma medical director at St. Mary's. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lauren.
So let's start with just a general introduction about your background and what led you to specialize in trauma surgery and specifically pediatric trauma. I can't imagine that that is an easy job by any means.
So as you mentioned, I'm a trauma surgeon at St. Mary's Medical Center in Duluth. That means that I see and treat patients who come in with a variety of injuries, whether that be from a slip and fall on the ice or a sporting related accident or a motor vehicle collision, you name it. And I see patients of all ages. My particular interest in pediatric patients didn't evolve until I moved here to the Twin Ports area from Minneapolis a few years ago. And unlike in larger metropolitan areas where there are specified pediatric hospitals, there really isn't that sort of facility here in the Northland. In fact, St. Mary's Medical Center is the only pediatric trauma center north of the Twin Cities. So while there is expertise here, it's limited, and there was real need for learning more about pediatric trauma specifically.
What are some of the most common causes for trauma-related injuries in children?
Yeah, so some of them are similar to what we see in adults. By far, the most common reason for trauma admission for both pediatric patients and adults is falls. But children are a little bit different, right? So children, they fall off platforms, they fall off stairs, they fall off tables, they fall from windows. You know, making sure that safety in the home is adequate is a really important part of preventing some of those injuries. Children are also a lot more active and outside. We saw a lot of this during the COVID pandemic, where there was not the ability to go to school or not the ability to go to organized play type activities. And so children were getting out on their, you know, ATVs and their scooters and doing all sorts of recreational things, but that leads to sporting related injuries. And then we also see the typical motor vehicle crashes, even with all the safety features that cars have these days. You know, we unfortunately do see those injuries still in the younger populations.
So we're going to talk about ATV accidents and the like in just a minute, but because, you know, you do this so much, it's your job. Are there any types of pediatric trauma that parents should be aware of that maybe they're not thinking of right now?
Yeah, I think really it's probably for younger patients and especially for new parents. One of the things to keep in mind is that young children can't tell you what hurts. They can't always be assessed for whether they are coherent or not. So especially for very young patients, you know, under the age of 2, really being vigilant about if your child is behaving abnormally after a fall, if they're vomiting, if they're just less active or less playful, that might be an indication for something being wrong, because a one-year-old can't necessarily tell you that something hurts, or maybe a one-year-old can, but certainly a one-month-old is going to behave a little bit differently than, say, your 10-year-old, who can tell you, mommy, my arm hurts, or mommy, my leg hurts.
Right. So now let's talk about ATV and UTV accidents. What are the most common injuries that kids sustain from these type of accidents, or even motorized scooter accidents? Because I know ATVs, little kids, they love to hop on those, and scooters, they love to hop on those. Sure. But what are the risks with that?
Yeah, so we see the whole gamut of injuries with motorized scooters and ATVs, in part because these are high impact injuries, right? So unlike a fall from standing or a fall off a step, these motorized vehicles are traveling pretty quickly. Children hit the ground or flip these vehicles with pretty significant force, which can lead to everything from extremity fractures to internal organ injuries. By far, though, the most devastating injuries that we see are ones that are related to spinal cord injury or traumatic brain injury. And those lead to the most devastating consequences, sometimes significant disability or even death.
So are there specific age recommendations for kids using ATVs, UTVs, and motorized scooters that would maybe lessen that impact, I guess?
There are, both in terms of Minnesota law and also in terms of safety recommendations. And these can all be looked up on the Minnesota DNR website. But generally, these can be broken down into the sort of class of motorized vehicle and then also into age group. So in terms of ATVs in Minnesota, these are classified as either a class 1 or a class 2. Class 1 ATVs, very simply, are typically smaller. They are defined as being 50 inches or less from wheel to wheel in width. They tend to have a lower horsepower, and they tend to be the ones that you see that have handlebars and where you're straddling a saddle. Class 2 ATVs are side-by-sides, anything bigger. They often have a steering wheel. They have a little bit more horsepower, can travel at a higher speed. Technically, children under the age of 16 18, so 15 and younger, really are only allowed to operate class one vehicles. And very young children under the age of 10 are really only allowed to operate these vehicles on private land. So either their parents' land or with the permission of a landowner. Also, if you're under the age of 16, you are allowed to operate independently on private land. But if you are out on a public space or on a frozen lake or something like that on the roadway, you should be accompanied by an adult. This usually happens, but not always.
Right.
Once you reach the age of 16, you are allowed to operate a class two vehicle, but you are supposed to have a driver's license. You are supposed to have an ATV safety certification. There are still restrictions in terms of operating on roadways and such.
So what kind of safety measures can parents take to prevent accidents when it comes to ATVs, UTVs, motorized scooters?
Sure. If I could ask parents to do one thing, I would ask them to encourage helmet use. And I think this starts at a young age. The most devastating injuries that we see in children from all sorts of mechanisms are related to severe traumatic brain injury. And while a helmet doesn't necessarily completely eliminate the possibility of a traumatic brain injury, it makes it less likely to be a fatal one. So that's a starting point. I think also there are ATV safety courses that are available. They're recommended for anyone that's going to drive an ATV, particularly on public land. But they teach certain safety features, how to operate, how to minimize the risk of flipping your ATV, things like that. So I'd recommend that if you're going to let your kid get out in an ATV, you give them that education before you set them free on their own.
And I have had an episode on this podcast before about just how important it is to wear a helmet and how if adults wear helmets in front of their kids, it might encourage them. What are some other ways that we can, as adults, encourage helmet use when it comes to children?
I wish I could think of ways to make it cool. You know, we've seen that with some sports, right, that it becomes part of your equipment. So certainly nobody goes out and plays hockey. I like to use skiing as an example because 20, 30 years ago, you know, people used to hit the slopes with no helmet. And now not only are helmets somewhat ubiquitous, but they're trendy.
Right.
So trying to make it not only a mandate or a requirement, but just to encourage that it's fun.
So if anyone is listening to this and they want to get a helmet, if they do, you know, go on ATVs or UTVs often, what are the specific guidelines or standards that helmets should meet?
Keep in mind that motorized vehicles go up to, you know, 60 plus miles per hour, depending on the class of vehicle and how fast you're gunning it. So we really recommend using a Department of Transportation certified helmet. They come with a sticker on the back. You can find them at most sporting equipment places. They'll have that certification that proves that they have been safety tested to the highest standards. Usually it consists of a hard outer shell and then a polystyrene lining. They don't all have visors or full face protection, but again, they are all tested to provide minimal level of support that is adequate for motorized vehicles.
So before we move on to the topic of trampolines, I want to ask one last thing about ATV and UTV accidents. Are there any laws or regulations regarding these and the use of motorized scooters by kids as well?
Again, touching on that, so there are age related restrictions in terms of if you are under the age of 15, you really shouldn't be operating a class two vehicle and you really shouldn't be operating in public space without somebody over the age of 18 being with you. Now, that doesn't have to be somebody on the same vehicle. That can be somebody on a separate vehicle, but it is recommended that if you're in a public space, you're with supervision. Also, keep in mind that ATVs aren't allowed everywhere, and there's a good reason that they're not allowed everywhere. They're not designed to be on public roadways. They do not have the safety features, the shocks, the seat belts, the other things that make them safe for driving on a road with motor vehicles that have much more robust safety features. And so an ATV versus a car, if you're out on the roadway, the car is going to win every time.
So now let's talk about trampolines. I know that when I was growing up, my parents bought me a trampoline, but then just as soon as it arrived, it was gone already. And that's obviously because, you know, they can cause injuries. They're not the safest thing in the world. So what are some of the most common injuries seen in pediatric trauma cases when it comes to trampolines?
Yeah, I think we had one of those simple individual ones and I never got the fun, like high, jumpy, bouncy tent at home. Yeah, so actually the American Academy of Pediatricians actually recommends against trampoline use for kids under the age of six. And And that's probably why there's been a little bit of a drawback or a little bit of a lull in trampoline use. But we're seeing a lot more of it again. it's obviously a fun way for kids to blow off steam. But we do see all sorts of injuries related to trampoline use. A lot of them, probably 80% of them, are related to some sort of extremity fracture. But again, we also see, you know, kids fall and hit their head or land on their back. And so we also see traumatic brain injury. We also see spine injuries. More rarely, we can see internal injuries from trampoline use as well.
So when it comes to a trampoline, how effective are safety nets and padding in preventing injuries? Because I'm sure parents buy a trampoline, they get the safety nets and the padding. Are those effective when it comes to preventing injuries?
Yes, and not 100%, right? The safety netting prevents kids from falling off the trampoline. It doesn't prevent them from, you know, bouncing and landing awkwardly on part of the trampoline or bouncing and landing onto somebody else who's bouncing with them, right? So, you know, some of the injuries that we see are young people colliding into each other, and that's something that's not going to be prevented by that safety net. So I'm not discouraging the use of it. It's probably about a 50% reduction in injury. But again, it doesn't completely mitigate the risk.
Right. But I guess better than nothing.
Of course.
So how can healthcare providers educate parents and kids about the risks and safe practices of trampoline use?
We're never going to gain traction by asking parents or kids to just completely avoid trampoline use, right? It's fun. When done safely, it can be a great way to spend an afternoon and blow off some steam or just have some fun. But doing things to make it as safe as possible. So, you know, if you're going to put your four-year-old or your five-year-old on a trampoline, it probably doesn't make sense to have somebody who weighs four times as much on at the same time.
Right.
So having kids that are of really different weights or sizes, that creates a lot more opportunity, especially for the smaller child to get hurt. Having the safety features that you talked about, like having a net around the trampoline if you're doing this at home, is helpful to prevent some of the falls off of the trampoline. Some of it is also just being wary that even though flips and turns and the tricks that you can do on a trampoline can be fun and kind of cool, those are also the riskier activities to do on a trampoline. So a lot more risk for a head injury or a neck injury if you land awkwardly.
What are some other activities that maybe kids can do to stay active and kind of blow off steam, like you mentioned, that doesn't have the associated risk?
Everything's going to have some risk. We're in a very recreational area in the Northland, and we're getting into the spring season where we see kids out on bikes as well as on motorized vehicles. We're getting into baseball season and the spring sporting seasons and all of, you know, the organized sports that take place in the spring. And even those have some risk. I think that knowing what some of the modifiable risk factors are and encouraging parents to enforce some of the safety measures with their kids is really important.
So now that we've talked about ATV accidents and motorized scooters and trampolines and all these things, I want to wrap up by asking you about the level 2 pediatric trauma center at St. Mary's Medical Center. Can you explain what a level 2 pediatric trauma center is and how it differs from other trauma centers?
Trauma centers are given a designation of 1 to 4 based on how equipped they are to manage different levels of injury. A level 1 trauma center has all the resources, all the personnel needed to handle this whole spectrum of traumatic injury. St. Mary's Medical Center is a level 1 trauma center for adult patients. A level 2 pediatric trauma center has the resources, the staffing, and the expertise to manage most traumatic injuries, both dealing with their initial management and then through the completion of care. There are some injuries that we might choose to send to a higher level 1 pediatric trauma center, but there's really not much that can't be treated locally at our facility. That level designation is given by the American College of Surgeons, which vets hospitals across the country. And they go through a rigorous re-verification cycle every 3 years to ensure that we are maintaining the highest level of care for these patients. So we have, you know, everything from the equipment that we need in the emergency room to 24/7 staffing with nurses and surgeons and ICU doctors and what have you that can care for these patients. We have child life specialists, we have social workers, we have chaplaincy, we have everyone that you can imagine that cares for these patients from the moment they wheel in the emergency room door to the time that they leave.
So you just touched on this a bit, but can you go into more detail about what specialized care you have at a level two pediatric trauma center?
Yes. So it starts in the emergency room. So we have emergency providers that have special training in pediatric care. We have equipment available for whether it be splinting or putting a breathing tube in if a child needs to be put on a ventilator, anything that might be necessary for immediately stabilizing the patient in the emergency room. We have specialists from across the hospital. So again, all of our trauma surgeons are not only specially trained in trauma, but they all do some extra training in pediatric care. Our emergency room physicians are also very well qualified to treat children as well as adults. Our specialty surgical services like orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, vascular surgery all have some comfort level with pediatric patients, anesthesiology, nursing, ICU. So we really have the full ensemble, which is necessary because trauma is really a team sport.
Right. And that leads me to this question, something that I always wonder about. How does your trauma center work with local emergency services to ensure quick and effective treatment for pediatric trauma patients? Time is so important in these cases. So how do you guys kind of all work together?
Yeah, so emergency medical services are obviously the first link in the chain of survival of trauma. They're often scooping up these patients from their homes or from the trampoline park or what have you, and providing the first care that these patients get and making sure that they're safe and that they get to where they can receive definitive care with us. So we work very close with our EMS providers. They will typically relay information to us as they're bringing a child in, and we can often relay information back to them in terms of steps that can be taken to help stabilize that patient. But we also robustly communicate back with our EMS services in terms of providing feedback, what could be done better, what could be done differently, or what was done well in treating these children up front. So again, you know, trauma is a team sport. It does start with our EMS providers. And I think a lot of it is just working together to make a smooth transition from the pre-hospital setting to the in-hospital setting. I respect our EMS providers a ton. We come from different services here. We don't have an ambulance service that's designated for St. Mary's, but all the different groups, including the volunteer fire department agencies and things like that, that bring patients in are really doing their best to keep patients safe.
So I want to ask you one last question before I let you go here, just because, like I mentioned earlier, you know, you see so much in your work as a trauma surgeon. Is there something you would say maybe to parents about the things that we've talked about? Maybe not a plea, but just something that you really want them to know when it comes to, you know, the topic of ATVs and UTVs and trampoline accidents and things of that nature?
I think every parent wants their kid to be happy and healthy and safe. You can't wrap your kid up in bubble wrap and keep them safe from everything. There are a ton of fun activities that they're going to want to get out and do, and they should be able to do them. But obviously, there are some ways that we can mitigate some of the risks of those activities. Helmet use, seatbelt use in a car, abiding by certain safety regulations and rules can really go a long ways to protect your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've covered a lot when it comes to ATV accidents, trampoline accidents, and things of that nature. Julie Otteson, trauma surgeon and pediatric trauma medical director at St. Mary's Medical Center. Thank you for coming in, having this conversation. I think a lot of people are going to listen to this. A lot of parents are going to listen to this and hopefully take a lot away from it. So thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks again, Lauren.